GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1337, May 14, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Columbus. Columbus where? Columbus, Wisconsin. I bet you didn't know that there was a Columbus, Wisconsin. Let's see, there was no podcast last night. I unloaded at Moberly, Missouri, picked up a load later that day, picked that up at Marshall, Missouri, and then that load went to Rochelle, Illinois. So I spent the night last night at Springfield, Illinois, and so I got there and I was pretty tired, and so I just went straight to bed, and then got up this morning. Took my 10-hour break, and left there, headed on up to Rochelle. It was a drop and hook on both ends, so it was a drop and hook at Marshall, Missouri, and then a drop and hook at Rochelle, Illinois. And they promptly sent another load that picks up at Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, and then that load delivers to... where was it? Brockford, Brockford, New York. The load picks up Friday afternoon, midway Friday afternoon at Beaver Dam, Wisconsin, and then it delivers Monday afternoon in at Brockford, New York. Brockford is up somewhat. West of Rochester, in far sort of northern or northwestern New York, so it's up there. It's close to one of the great, the Great Lakes. So whichever Great Lakes, I don't even know. I have to look at the map. It might be Lake Ontario, but I wouldn't swear to it. So in any case, I went ahead after they sent the load. That was later this afternoon. I went ahead and drove up here to Wisconsin, and I found a fairly small fuel stop, truck stop that has an Arby's in it. It's about 19 miles from where I'm going to be picking the load up, Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. And so I stopped, I guess it was about 7 o'clock. I guess it was 7 p.m. when I got here. And so I went inside and got myself something to eat and then came back out to the truck. And then I've kind of spent some time on the computer answering email. And then I ended up remembering that I'd forgotten to watch 24. And somehow... I don't know how it happened, but I'd missed... I thought it was should have only been one episode, unless they must have shown two episodes this past Tuesday. I don't know. But in any case, there were two episodes of 24 that I hadn't watched. And so I watched both of those on Hulu, and then I turned around and I watched the latest episode of V. And so I just now finished watching that. I don't know, I'm really enjoying this. Of course, this is the last season of 24. There are four more episodes left, and, you know, they're really, they know it's going to end. And so it's really, you know, the Jack Bauer character is kind of going over the top. Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. And then this V, I'm still enjoying V. Now, I've heard that their audience has kind of gone down. I hope that the audience, that they're able to kind of get the audience and kind of, you know, the thing doesn't go away, because I am enjoying it. I am enjoying the show, and I hope they're able to keep that. So, but if not, then I'm going to need to be finding some more stuff to watch. And of course I have Netflix, so I can always, there's always movies that I can watch. If the stuff from the network TV goes away, obviously 24 is going away. Four more episodes and that's it for 24, so I won't be watching that anymore on Hulu. And then the only thing after that I'm watching on Hulu is V. Currently, you know, once 24 goes away, and if V should go away, then won't be watching anything. Except, you know, just the stuff on Netflix. So I still have stuff to watch, but I am enjoying both 24 and V. So, in any case, spending the night here at this truck stop, and as I say, the load doesn't pick up until, it picks up, I think, 2:30 in the afternoon is a loading appointment. So I'll try to get there about an hour early. I'm guessing I'll probably leave this truck stop sometime around noon or maybe 12:30, and then go ahead and get up to the place where the load loads and check in with them, and then it may be a drop and hook there. It's possible. won't really know until I actually get there. But since it did come across as an actual loading appointment with a specific time, then that, you know, that there's a good chance that they'll have me back into the dock and actually load the load. So, but I've got the rest of the, after I get the load loaded, I've got the rest of the day, Friday evening, obviously, to drive, and then Saturday and Sunday. And it looks like it's about, what I looked earlier, it was about 700 and, it was either 730 or 760 miles. I believe it was 730 over to where the load delivers at, or you know, in the afternoon on Monday. I've got another audio comment from Scott Mitchell that I can play. And then I've also got a few emails along with some news stories that I've kind of collected. And so let me just jump right on into this email and those news stories. So I've got this email here from Ian, and he's saying, I'm listening to your podcast this morning of different places in the United States that are stressed out. Now, what he's responding to there, I read this, it was basically an article that had lists of the most, quote, economically stressed counties in the United States. Most of them were in California. you know, and then there was one, I think there were a couple in Illinois, two or three in Michigan, and maybe one in Florida. I can't remember now. But most of them were in California, and then it had the least economically stressed counties, and a lot of those were in the Midwest, you know, Kansas, Nebraska, places like that is where most of those were. So anyway, that's what he's referring to. He goes on, how did they measure that? Is it by the number of suicides? Is it by the number of wife beatings? Is it by the number of children that are obsessively overeating? People going postal? And that's from Ian, so thank you, Ian. Let's see what else we have here. Okay, and then there's this other email from Ian. He says, guess what? I went to Syracuse today and I bought a 16-gigabyte iPad. And I'd already mentioned this. And then we got another thing from Ian here that I'll get to in just a minute. So, anyway, Ian does have his iPad. And I got this little short little email from Brian. He says, you still work for Schaefer? How are things going? And, of course, I've already emailed Brian back, and I've told him that, you know, staying busy. You know, a lot of short overnight loads, so or a little bit longer loads sometimes, like this one I'm having here, you know, that I'll have on the weekend, but it's... you know, I've got plenty of time to get there with it. But I am staying busy. And so anyway, thank you, Brian. Then there was a Twitter message here from Irk. Irk, of course, is a podcaster from Australia, Sydney, Australia. You can find his podcast, many podcasts, at channelirk.com. He says, hi, mate. A ute, short for utility, is an Aussie. That's the Aussie word for a pickup truck. And sometime back, I was talking about this accident that had happened on the freeway north of Sydney that had kind of, you know, caused a massive traffic jam for a number of hours. And these articles were talking about utes, and U-T-E, ute, and I wasn't quite sure what a ute was. But that's what Australians call pickup trucks. So thank you, Irk. And there's this Twitter message from Brent, or BWGath, B-W-G-A-T-H on Twitter. It says, hey Tom, why did you buy a home server if you're hardly ever home? And, of course, I already messaged Brent back, and basically I bought it so that I could back up everything, you know, because I've had a hodgepodge of sort of a backup strategy, backing up stuff to this hard drive and that hard drive and trying to remember to do it. And so primarily I bought this server so that I could create a real bona fide backup of all my machines, including, you know, the MacBook, both MacBooks, all the Windows PCs that I have, create a real backup of it. And then the other part of that, I do have access. I can get access to the machine remotely. And so that's primarily why I did it. It's just, you know, I want to be able to back up. So still got more stuff I want to back up once I make it home again. So anyway, thank you, Brent. Then I've got this article that was sent by Ken. It says, and it's a huge spike in disability claims, clogging an overloaded system. This is from May the 10th, Washington. Nearly 5 million people are waiting to find out if they qualify for Social Security disability benefits. It will be a long wait for most, even if they eventually win their cases. 2 to 3 years for most of the cases. The Social Security system is so overwhelmed by applications for disability benefits that many people are waiting more than 2 years for their first payment. In Ohio, Michigan, Minnesota, and other states, the wait can be even longer. 3 years is normal. The Social Security Commissioner, Michael J. Estrue, says the delays are unacceptable, particularly for people who have paid payroll taxes for years to support the system and are now unable to work because of debilitating medical problems. Estrue has had some success in reducing a case backlog that has plagued the system for years, but a spike in new applications directly linked to the economic recession threatens to swamp the system again. Claims typically increase in a bad economy because many people who worked despite their disabilities get laid off and can't find a new job in their chosen career, so they finally end up applying for benefits out of sheer desperation. About 3.3 million people are expected to apply for benefits this year. That's 300,000 more than last year and 700,000 more than in 2008. Nearly two-thirds of those claims will be denied by state agencies overseen by the Social Security Administration. But for those willing to go through an appeals process and hire a lawyer, the process can take 2 years or more. Chances are good they will eventually get benefits. People who win claims can get big retroactive benefits, which is a one-time check paid for by the government and the taxpayers. The most important thing we can do to improve the disability process is to make the right decision as soon as possible, Estrue said at a recent congressional hearing. Certainly, I'm not happy with the accuracy of the system, even though it is getting better. His goal is to clear the backlog of appeals hearings by 2013. It takes longer to fix something than it does to break it, he said. Michael Quinn of Flint, Michigan, said he waited nearly 3 years to get benefits after his initial application. Quinn was a sales representative when he was in a car accident in 2000 that left him with a shattered left leg, damaged vertebra in his neck, and 80 stitches in his head, unable to do his job. He took a buyout from his employer and started working part-time jobs. The work, he said, proved too difficult because he couldn't bend over, lift anything heavy, or even move his head enough to look up. I wanted to work because I've worked all my life, Quinn said. It was heartbreaking because I couldn't work. There was so little I could do. Quinn, 64, said he filed for Social Security disability benefits in 2005 and his claim was denied. Quinn appealed to an administrative law judge and was awarded $1,900 a month in 2008. He got retroactive payments dating to his original application. The average monthly benefit payment is about $1,260 per month. It's the most helpless feeling in the world because you're waiting for someone else, and after you get it, you are completely dependent on the government, Quinn said. Qualifying for disability benefits is not easy. A doctor must determine that a disability is severe enough to interfere with an applicant's ability to work. If applicants can't perform their old jobs, officials see if they can adapt to new ones. The system is designed to weed out malingerers. Social Security has a very stringent, very tight definition of what constitutes a disability, said Dan Alsop, communications director for Alsop Incorporated, an Illinois-based company that represents disability applicants, including Quinn. It has to be that way to prevent the fraudulent, frivolous claims from getting into the system. About 12.8 million disabled people receive disability benefits. Some 7.1 million get Social Security disability. 4.2 million get supplemental security income, and 1.5 million get both. Disabled workers who get both SSD and SSI get an average of $1,065 a month from Social Security and a $498 a month from SSI. Only 8% on average of all cases will qualify for the dual payments. Disability benefits are financed by payroll taxes, the same taxes workers pay to support the retirement system, even though the program is rapidly approaching bankruptcy because more people are receiving benefits than people paying into the system. A problem that is expected to get much worse as the population continues to grow older. Here's how the application process works. Applicants file disability claims with the Social Security Administration, which turns them over to state agencies, usually called Disability Determination Services. A doctor must verify that debilitating medical conditions will last at least a year. About 63% of initial claims are denied after an average wait of 111 days. Applicants in most states can appeal the decision to the same state agency. About 86% of those appeals are denied after an average wait of an additional 104 days. Applicants can then appeal to an administrative law judge. About 554,000 cases were decided at this level in 2009. The judges approved benefits in 63% of the cases after an average processing time of 491 days, including the time it takes to file the appeals at each stage. The entire process takes an average of 777 days, or a little more than 2 years, according to the Congressional Research Service. Applicants who are still denied benefits can appeal to a special counsel and eventually file a claim in federal court, but relatively few claims are awarded at these stages. Estrue, who became Social Security Commissioner in 2007, has worked to reduce the backlog of appeals before administrative law judges by hiring hundreds of judges and support staff. The number of cases pending before those judges dropped by 37,000 to just under 723,000 during the budget year that ended in September. It was the first drop in a decade. The average processing time for that stage of the appeals process also dropped from 514 days in 2008 to 491 days in 2009 and 442 days this year. Many states have much longer waits. Alaska, which recently opened a hearing office, takes an average of 642 days for an administrative law judge to process a claim. Ohio takes 581 days, Michigan takes 564 days, and Minnesota takes 560 days, according to Social Security statistics compiled by ALSIP in 2009. Despite improvements, the spike in new applications is overwhelming the system. It's straining to meet the present case loads, and I don't believe we have a well-developed plan for what will happen in the future, said Representative Earl Pomeroy, Democrat in North Dakota, chairman of the House subcommittee that oversees Social Security. And then Ken had sent another article here. Google Android crushes the iPhone, takes number two spot. San Francisco. Google Incorporated displaced iPhone maker Apple Incorporated to become the second most popular provider of smartphone software in the United States during the first quarter, the latest sign of the increasing competition in the fast-growing mobile market, and Google did it a lot faster than the Apple iPhone did. Smartphones featuring Google's Android operating system accounted for 38% of U.S. smartphone unit sales in the first quarter, according to the NPD Group, behind top-ranked research in motion maker of BlackBerry phone, which had a 46% share of the market. Windows Mobile continues to downward slide with only 7% of the market. Smartphones, which allow consumers to surf the web, send email, and run specialized applications on high-resolution color screens, are increasingly replacing no-frills cell phones for many U.S. consumers. No one wants a dumb phone anymore, and decent free cell phones are getting much harder to find. The devices have become a prime battleground for a variety of tech companies seeking to ensure a good position in the evolving market. Last month, Hewlett-Packard Company said it would pay $1.2 billion to acquire Palm Incorporated, which sells two smartphone models based on its WebOS operating system, which saved Palm from certain bankruptcy. Microsoft Corporation, whose Windows operating system is used in the majority of the world's PCs, unveiled a pair of smartphones last month and recently launched a revamped version of its mobile operating system, though it may be too late to help. Apple has sold more than 51 million iPhones since it launched the device to wide acclaim in 2007, and the company says that more than 200,000 apps are available for the phone. Many of those apps, however, are poorly designed and not very practical for real-world use. Most users only use an Apple app for 30 days or less before deleting it. In the first quarter, Apple's iPhone, which is available exclusively on the AT&T wireless network in the United States, dropped to third place as its share of the smartphone operating system market remained flat quarter over quarter at 21% share. One of Apple's ongoing problems is that a lot of people don't like AT&T's unreliable and spotty service. Unlike Apple, Google offers its Android software to other phone makers. In April, Google said that a dozen vendors currently offer 34 devices that feature the Android software. NPD analyst Ross Rubin said the strong showing of Android phones during the first quarter owed to promotions by Verizon Wireless, which he said has expanded its buy one, get one offer. Verizon Wireless is a venture of Verizon Communications and Vodafone Group PLC. As in the past, carrier distribution and promotion have played a crucial role in determining smartphone market share, said Rubin in a statement. While the Android operating system is gaining momentum in the market, Google has had less luck with the Nexus One phone, the Android-based device that it designed in close collaboration with HTC. Google sells directly to consumers from its website. Now, I actually looked at the website with the Nexus One, and the only, it had SIM cards, and of course I'm a Sprint customer, and Sprint only, they're doing I can't think of the acronym now, right off the top of my head, I can't think of it, but it's incompatible. It doesn't use SIM. It's not, if it has to have a SIM, then it's GSM, and I can't think of the acronym that Sprint and Verizon both use. It's a different. It's the other system, and it's primarily just used in North America. Now, I guess maybe the Nexus One, they're going to be coming out with versions that would work with Sprint or Verizon, but I don't know. I think I'm going to skip it because, I've got another phone in mind, and I'm going to be talking about that in just a bit. Google sells directly to consumers from its website. In a report earlier this year, and it's very expensive too, analytics from Flurry estimated that Google sold roughly 135 Nexus One phones in its first 74 days on the market, compared to with the 1 million iPhones that Apple sold in the same time frame when it initially released the device in 2007. Several high-end Android smartphones will be released this summer, most notably the HTC Evo, and that's the one I have my eye on, which will be available only on Sprint's network, which promises blistering 4G speeds by the end of the year in most major markets. And let's see here, and then there's this article here. So thank you, Ken, for sending those articles. And there's this article here that was sent by Ian, and this is from the Toronto Star. Almost 4,400 drivers ticketed for cell phones MP3 players. And this is from May the 10th. Toronto police say that a policy of absolutely no tolerance has resulted in more than 4,000 tickets for drivers using cell phones and other handheld devices in just 3 months. On February 1, police began issuing $155 tickets to drivers caught talking on phones, text messaging, or using devices such as laptop computers, video players, and MP3 players. By April 30, they had fined 4,397 motorists in the city, with 296 of those charges relating to use of devices other than phones. Police had merely issued warnings between October, when the new law came into effect, and February, when strict enforcement began. Patrol officers now nab offending drivers by monitoring traffic from a stationary position in a cruiser or standing at the side of the road and watching cars approach, or by pulling over vehicles when they spot a motorist on the phone in traffic. The three charges relating to the use of devices while driving are holding a handheld communication device, having a display screen visible to the driver, and using a handheld entertainment device. And there's no talking your way out of a ticket if you're pulled over while using an electronic gadget, says Sergeant Tim Burrows of Traffic Services. There is absolutely no tolerance, zero, said Burrows. What's more, if a driver challenges the ticket in court, a judge has the discretion to raise the fine to as much as $500. More than 3 months into full enforcement, Burroughs says police are now noticing an increase in offenses as drivers slide into the old habit of reaching for their cell phones. One of the things we've seen is an ebb and flow to it, he said. When we first started the enforcement, it kind of went away a bit and we didn't see it as much. Now we're starting to see it creep back into society again. Burroughs said police aren't targeting a specific number of drivers so much as they are trying to change everyone's driving habits. It's not to see how many we can catch, but how much behavior can be changed to make our roads safer. And let me throw in, they want the money from the tickets. Don't forget that. And then Ian sent this other article it's in the Ottawa Citizen. Going the distance for an iFix. The much-hyped iPad comes to Canada on May 28, but that's not soon enough for Ian Duff, reports Vito. I'm going to butcher this last name. It's like an Italian name. P-I-L-I-E-C-I. I don't know how I can't pronounce that. That's an Italian name. And then there's a picture of Ian here with his... he's got his iPad and his iPod and his Apple computer behind him. But I'll try to put a link to this article in the show notes. Let's see here... Well, the caption for the picture, it says, Ian Duff loves his apples. He has an iPad, an iTouch, and an Apple computer. And he couldn't wait for the iPad to go on sale in Canada, so he drove recently to Syracuse, New York, to buy one there. While Apple Incorporated began taking pre-orders Monday for its much-hyped iPad tablet computer in Canada, some fans just couldn't wait to get their hands on the device. Ottawa resident Ian Duff has been planning to buy an iPad since the device went on sale in the United States in April, but chronic shortages and long lists of back orders thwarted his efforts. Duff has been in constant touch with the Apple Store in Syracuse over the past several weeks to snag an iPad before they are made available to Canadians. I phoned them on Friday night just after closing time, and they told me they had the 16-gigabyte model and 32-gigabyte versions, the 67-year-old Duff said. He said the store wouldn't hold the device for him, so an early morning trip to the U.S. was in order. I figured if I left at 5:30 in the morning on Saturday, I'd get there just as they were opening. Duff bought the 16-gigabyte iPad for $499 U.S., which will be available in Canada for $549 Canadian on May 28. Waiting wasn't an option for Duff. He will be attending his 50th high school reunion in Montreal on May 28 and wanted to make sure he was among the first in the country to get his iPad fix. He is already impressed with the device. The oversized screen is just what he needed to surf the web, check email, and stay in touch with family members. Whoops, I scrolled up too much. I loved the iPod Touch, except the screen is a bit small. The screen on this is four times as big, Duff said. Browsing the net was not a fun thing on the Touch. This thing here is a proper thing to browse the net. The iPad is a cross between a laptop computer and an iPhone. The device offers the functionality of a computer, including word processing and internet surfing, and doubles as an electronic book reader. Consumers interact with the device using its touchscreen. The iPad is about the size of a hardcover book, weighs less than a kilogram, and is a little more than a centimeter thick. Since its release a little more than a month ago, the iPad has become a massively popular consumer electronics device. In its first month of availability in the U.S., more than 1 million iPads were sold, less than half the time it took Apple's iPhone to reach the same milestone. The popularity seemed to catch Apple off guard, prompting shortages, and the company postponed international sales to focus on meeting U.S. demand. Demand continues to exceed supply, and we're working hard to get this magical product into the hands of even more consumers, Apple CEO Steve Jobs said in a release. According to Carl Howe, an analyst with the Yankee Group, the new Apple device could soon make history. If demand continues at its current pace, more than $1 billion U.S. worth of iPads will be sold in less than 80 days, he said. Apple's iPad will likely take the crown for the fastest consumer product growth to the $1 billion revenue mark in history, taking less than 80 days from the beginning of the pre-orders to reach that milestone, Howe said on his blog. On Monday, Canadian cellular giant Rogers announced data packages specifically for the iPad. The company said consumers could get 250 megabytes of cellular data for $15 per month or 5 gigabytes of cellular data for $35 monthly. The iPad will also run on Bell and Telus Mobility's nationwide HSPA cellular network. Pricing information has not yet been released, and what they're talking about is the data plan pricing for Bell and Telus Mobility, and both of those in Canada. And that was from the Ottawa Citizen. So thank you, Ian. That's a cool article. And Ian said that, you know, he follows a number of these, you know, all these newspapers on Twitter, including the Ottawa Citizen, and so they, you know, they'd send out a Twitter message asking anybody, you know, wanting to buy an iPad that's going to be buying one, and so Ian responded to it, and that's how he got in touch with them. So it's a pretty cool little article. And let's see, here's an, I'm not sure where I got this article from. Apple promises to fix iPad Wi-Fi issues in future software update. Let's see. Well, this is from a blog post. One of the sentences here. Interestingly, Apple also now suggests adjusting the screen brightness if you're experiencing the problem, which is a fix that was previously discovered by some users on their own, but not recommended by Apple. So, some people have had a little bit of problem getting the thing to connect, and or there may be a little problem with the sensitivity somehow, but it apparently you can adjust the screen brightness, and it doesn't say if you adjust it up or you adjust it down. But somehow that ends up resolving the problem. That article was sent by Ken, by the way. And then there's this other blog post here. It's about this payment system, and it's very interesting. I'll read this blog post. We have been intrigued by the Square payment system since it first ditched its squirrel costume back in 2009, and now it appears we're on the eve or the eve of the eve, or pretty close anyway, to its release not only for the iPhone, but for the iPad and the Android as well. The software is said to be hitting app stores and markets this week, working with a sugar cube-sized card reader, credit card reader, that pops into the 3.5mm headphone jack, a device that the company is giving away for free to those who sign up. Using it will not be free, with retailers paying fees starting at 2.75% plus a 15-cent surcharge. But that's considerably cheaper than many other options out there, which often require costly hardware to boot. There's another video after the break. We can't wait for these things to start showing up at the farmer's market. No more early morning ATM runs. And so basically what this is, it's a little thing about the size of a sugar cube, but it's actually a credit card reader. It plugs into the bottom of... they're saying either iPhone, iPad, or an Android phone, plugs into the, you know, into the 3.5mm headphone jack, and you obviously it's what it's doing as you swipe the card. What happens, it's converting that into audio, and then the program is capturing the audio and converting that into the credit card number. That's how that works. Almost guarantee you that's how it works. So you can pay, basically. So you've got your phone, you put the software on there, plug this device into it, the matching device, and it's a payment system. You know, allowing someone to accept a credit card right on your smartphone, and so that's pretty cool. I can imagine some businesses maybe adopting something like this, and what they're talking about is like at a flea market or whatever, and also you could possibly make payments with this device to certain websites. So it's kind of interesting. Let's see. Skype to offer advertising to keep service free. Josh Silverman, the chief executive at Skype, the popular internet telephone and video service, is seriously considering launching third-party advertising that can't be skipped, deleted, blocked, or blacked out. Silverman, who says the company's mission statement is to be the fabric of real-time communication on the web, has revealed that his team are looking into the possibility of additional revenue streams. It's challenging to get right, as the way people use Skype is very personal, but we think our users expect us to do it so we can continue to support free, but it will be done in a tasteful way, he explained. Currently, there are no third-party advertisements on the service. The service, 6 months on from the creation of its new board, which saw eBay sell 56 PC of the company to Silver Lake, an investor group, while retaining a 30% stake, and the rest returning to the founders, serial web entrepreneurs by Nicholas Zinstrom and Janice Frills, as part of the complicated legal dispute settlement, is ramping up its premium offerings to generate additional revenue streams. Last week, Skype announced the rollout of a raft of new monthly subscription services, offering its cheapest calls yet across more than 170 countries. Its biggest revenues come from people using their Skype account to make audio-only calls to landlines or mobiles anywhere in the world, on a pay-as-you-go basis. The new deals cut the minute rate, by as much as 60% down on Skype's pay-as-you-go rate in a bid to up its subscriber base, escalating its rivalry with the major telecommunication companies. This week, Skype is also launching five-way video group calling in beta, For the first 3 months, it will be free while the company monitors its progress and user feedback, but then it will become a service people have to pay a monthly fee for. And then here's an article about the HTC Evo. And by the way, I got an email from Sprint, and the Evo goes on sale. I think it's, let me check here. I believe it's, I'll just look here in my mail. The Evo goes on sale on June the 4th. They're charging $199.99. And that you have that's after a $100 mail-in rebate, so it's actually you're going to pay up front $299.99, and then you have a $100 mail-in rebate that you mail in after you've kept it so many days, and then of course then you also end up going on another 2-year service plan, but this is the one I'm looking for. So June the 4th. So anyway, there's this article at Ken sent. HTC Evo 4G training begins at Sprint, reveals a few surprises. The HTC Evo 4G has already turned up in Sprint's inventory, hit the FCC, and pushed away anything in its path. And it looks like it's now a hit one more milestone. It's hit one more milestone on its way to availability, the all-important Sprint employee training program. While there's still no indication of the actual release date, the training materials do reveal a few new details, including the first real indication that customers who buy the phone will also have to sign up for special plans designed for the HTC Evo 4G. Details on those plans remain a mystery. Unfortunately for those, but those new 4G plans will probably cost more money than the current 3G ones. The materials also seem to suggest that both Sprint Navigation and Google Navigation will be present on the device, that the hotspot feature will support WEP and WPA encryption, and the phone does indeed pack an FM radio. Hit up the source link below for a look at the rest of the materials. And so, but anyway, that's they've got a screenshot here of the phone. So it has a 1 gigahertz Snapdragon processor. It's got a 1500 milliamp hour battery, Wi-Fi capable, GPS navigation, stereo Bluetooth capable, micro SD card up to 32 gigabytes, proximity and motion sensor, digital compass, 4.3 capacitive multi-touch display, BMP and 8 megapixel and 1.3 megapixel cameras. So it's got an 8 megapixel camera on the back that's actually capable of recording HD video. And then a 1.3 megapixel camera on the front that you could use for video conferencing. Mobile hotspot router and HDMI output. So you can actually record HD video with this. And then buy an optional HDMI cable that plugs into the phone that allows you to plug, you know, you could plug that into your TV that has an HDMI input connector on it and play your HD video back directly to your television, which that's pretty amazing actually. So I don't know, but I'll probably end up calling Sprint and find out if I can just if I have to go to a store in order to get it, because I imagine that, you know, there's enough people that are interested in this phone that there's probably going to be a shortage of it, you know, once it hits the stores. So I'm wondering if they're pre-selling it via the internet. I don't know about that. But if they do pre-sales, then I might just go ahead and order it, and then they can just send it to me. And I don't even have to worry about going to a Sprint store. So, Anyway, Well, we're about 50 minutes. Probably better be going ahead and cutting this off. See if I can get headed towards bed, so I can get up tomorrow. Or later today, actually. It's about 1:30 in the morning right now. So anyway, hope everyone is having a great week. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.